Navy Athletics and your source for federal news now. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ, and you're all wound up today.
I'm really wound up. This was a big week for technology. Of course, we have the whole Paula Broadwell issue and all of the emails, and I'm going to talk about how the FBI tracked her down, even though she was sending out emails from throwaway locations in hotels where she was staying.
Really?
So it was very, and so give people advice if you want to keep your email secret, how to handle that.
Good.
Not that our listeners would need anything like that.
Not that we would need anything like that, no.
And there's a big shakeup at Microsoft. Steven Sinofsky was fired. I'm going to feature him today in Profiles in IT. Remember, last week we had a big shakeup of the guy behind the iOS at Apple.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get along with the CEO at Apple, and so Steven Sinofsky, of course, was the guy that led Windows 7, then Windows 8. After the successful launch of Windows 8, bingo, he was gone because he didn't get along with Steve Ballmer. I'll talk about what he did. And you know the big news of the week? No more Twinkies.
Yeah, I know. That's huge.
Twinkies bit the dust, and you know, there's a lot of talk on that because, you know, they've always said that real programmers do not eat quiche, they eat Twinkies.
Yeah, I can imagine that.
Now, they eat Twinkies because they're in vending machines.
Mm-hmm.
They also eat Szechuan food because it's delivered at 4 a.m. Also, real programmers love the product Jolt Cola,
mm-hmm,
and have been doing that instead of Coke or Mountain Dew. So it's been a bad, bad week for real programmers.
But here the thing of it is, I mean, we were talking about this off the air. Twinkies really aren't going to go away. Either somebody, the brands will be sold to another manufacturer, or
yes,
you had another theory.
Yeah, it could be that they're going to auction off all the equipment, auction off the brand name, and the owners of the company might buy back the company at auction,
mm-hmm,
and restart it again. Now, the problem, of course, is that they lost $365 million last year.
That's a
so
huge problem.
I'm thinking that maybe they're not really tied into the health food direction.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, we were saying people don't eat that junk anymore to the same extent we used to.
They don't eat. They need like a whole wheat Twinkie.
With the soy filling.
With a soy,
mm-hmm,
filling.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I went back and looked at Twinkies. Before World War II, Twinkies had a banana filling.
Did they really?
Did you know that?
That sounds gross.
And then there was a shortage of bananas in World War II, so they switched to the vanilla filling.
Huh.
So now I've just really done, but you know, I've sort of talked to some of my programmer friends. They're really in mourning. So now there's a big demand out there for Twinkies.
People are hoarding them.
People are hoarding them. Twinkies have been selling for $60 for a bag of two. And I went to eBay. Somebody's offering a single Twinkie for $5,000 on eBay. So if you just got more money than you
brains,
than you know, yeah, more money than brains, just go there. You could buy a single Twinkie for $5,000. So I think there's going to be a lot of hoarding and buying up of Twinkies over the next while. Oh, I also drove on the hot lanes this
morning.
You
did, yeah.
They opened up today, so
mm-hmm,
I took the hot lane from Route 66 to Beltway North. It didn't save me any time at all because there was really no traffic,
sure,
on the Beltway today, but I just wanted to do it. 75 cents when there's no traffic.
That was a total ride. That wasn't the charge for mile per mile, was
it? No,
it
was the total ride, 75 uh-huh cents. But as I understand, they're going to keep adjusting the toll so that you can get an average speed of 55 miles an hour, and it may go up to as much as $1, $1.20 a mile or more,
mm-hmm,
depending on how many people use it. So they'll just keep driving up the price to see to check the pain point until the traffic volume drops on the hot lane.
I want to see when this starts causing accidents because the price goes up to the roof and people try to cut back into regular traffic in order to avoid.
You can't get off of it.
You can't because the barrier separation?
No, there's a barrier separation. And once you're on it, the only way to get off of it is to exit
the Beltway and get back onto the Beltway?
You have to exit and then you have to get back on at a regular entrance. There's no way to go from. And you know why they don't want you to do that? Because they don't want you to go to the Beltway just before the RFID toll reader and then get back on.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't want you to play games with the toll. Now, I guess you could just go through those plastic barriers, but, it's probably not a good idea.
It'd be
a very, very bad idea. There's also a lot of news on China and cyber warfare. That's really been hitting the airways quite a bit. And we're going to feature today the dumb idea of the week.
This is really dumb. It's really funny.
It's a pee-controlled game that's mounted above urinals. We'll have to talk about that. And actually, it's been used. And I'll also talk about how the cloud helped Obama win. Remember, last week we talked about how the cloud applications of Romney failed and they melted down. Well, Obama's were successful. We'll talk about how he did it. And, of course, yet again, we had another huge, huge mailbag.
Unbelievably big.
So now it is time for
your mailbox.
He is over-anxious today.
He wants
to get to it.
Oh, that's right. We got an email from Jim in Michigan. Dear Tech Talk, my son only responds to text messages. He does not like to answer the phone. I think this is a common problem that all parents have.
Yeah.
I have an old cell phone that cannot send text message. Is there a way that I can send a text message from my computer so my son will talk to me? Thanks. Love the show. Jim in Michigan. Well, Jim, the good news is you can send a text message from your computer to any cell phone. It's very easy to do. Now, I would actually suggest that you upgrade your phone because you can get a cheap phone that will send a text message. I've got some people that like these little flip phones that won't send text messages. We have some relatives like that, and they're proud of the fact that they've got this old technology. But I think you should just swallow your pride and get a phone with
it. Look at this. Even I have an iPhone. Even me.
And listen, when Jim Russ gets an iPhone, that's really when all the laggards are hitting the technology.
So pretty much,
you should be ashamed if you're not don't have at least an iPhone.
I've gone to the head of the laggard class.
You have. Mm-hmm. You're kind of more in the middle of the bell curve. So what you can do, you can actually send an email to the SMS gateway. Every vendor has an SMS gateway, and what the SMS gateway does, it takes your email. It then converts it to a text message, truncates it to 140 characters because that's the length of a text message, and then it sends it to the phone as a text message. And then when they answer you, it goes back to the SMS gateway, converted to an email, and then you get a response to your email client. So you can actually conduct a conversation, email the text message quite easily. Now, every vendor has a different gateway. So, for instance, the AT&T gateway in the U.S. would be the phone number at text.AT&T.net. So you put in the phone number. In the case of AT&T, you have to put the phone number in without the country code. These are all for U.S. use. When you go to other countries, you've got to worry about the so it's actually a different gateway, different countries. Mm-hmm. So at AT&T, you just put in the phone number at text.AT&T.net. If you've got a Verizon number, you do the phone number at vtext.com. If you're T-Mobile, you do the phone number at tmomail.net. Or if you're Sprint, you do the phone number at messaging.sprintpca.com. Those would be four of them. And I'll give a link to a Wikipedia page that has all the gateways for all the servers worldwide. It's a huge list. But it's very easily done. And I think these gateways are, how people will send out spam text messages to you. I think these gateways are used for a lot of, because you could have a block of emails sent to a group, and they could all be gateway email addresses and could send out text messages. With an email client.
So the thing of it is you need to know the carrier or the person you're trying to connect with.
You need to know the carrier. Now, what I did is that now you can go to these gateways if you want, and you can register an alias. So you could say, Radio God at vtext.com, and then you could register your phone number with that alias, and then people could just simply send a message, Radio God at vtext.com. But of course, that would be for Howard Stern. Wouldn't that? Isn't he? Isn't that what he calls himself? I'm trying to remember.
It's been so long.
It's been so long since he disappeared to satellite. I can't even remember.
Exactly. I don't know.
Okay, we got an email from Ted in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm planning to do a clean install of my Windows operating system, and I have to reinstall all my applications. My problem is that I don't know the serial numbers of my current software. How can I find them and then save them? I listen to the podcast each week. Thanks, Ted in Texas.
Kansas.
Well, Ted in Kansas. Yeah.
Close enough.
It's close enough.
It's somewhere.
Yeah, actually, they are close. Kansas and Texas. There are only a couple states. There's only one.
A couple big states. It's Oklahoma, right?
There's only one state between them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's close. It's close enough.
Okay.
Well, the
sidebar.
Okay, the good news is that all your serial numbers are actually contained in the registry of your Windows system, so it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a program written by Abelsoft, A-B-E-L-S-O-F-T, called My Key Finder, that will collect all your keys, put them in a nicely formatted and displayed file, and you can look at them, and you can save that file as a PDF or as a or you can print the file, and you just run Find My Key, and it just goes to the registry and it collects all the keys for you. It's really very convenient. I played around with it this morning. Now, it's free to download, but then after you've used it once, they say, you know, we do need people to support us as we develop our free software, and we would suggest that you contribute 10 euros. So obviously it's written in Europe somewhere.
I don't have any euros.
So it's a 10 euro contribution. I just used it one time, and I was going to talk about it on the show, so I didn't send them 10 euros. But actually, when I do find shareware that I use and I like, I make a point to pay these guys. Because,
would they take 10 Twinkies instead?
You know, they probably would take 10.
Twinkies are probably worth way more than 10 euros right now.
Yeah, I would think they would probably take 10 Twinkies instead. That is sure. So you can, if you want to find this, you can just Google Find My Key, or rather, Google My Key Finder,
mm-hmm.
My Key Finder, and then you'll get it. I'll also have the link to the Abelsoft website and the exact page that has My Key Finder on it. That's a great program, and it you know, on my computer, I've got a new laptop. It took it about 90 seconds to locate all the keys, and then I had this beautifully formatted file. Very convenient.
Cool.
We got an email from Bernie in Manassas.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Tech Talk, I just bought a camera that allows me to take photographs in either JPEG, JPEG plus RAW, or just RAW. If I take pictures in RAW, the resulting picture is about 24 megabytes. When I save it as a JPEG, it's 8 megabytes. If I save it as a TIFF, it's 45 megabytes. What format should I use, and what does this have to do with resolution? Thanks.
Excellent.
Bernie and Manassas. That's a good question, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, pixels and resolution are independent of file format, first of all. So how you save it has nothing to do with the resolution. You select the resolution of the picture that you take. That depends on how many pixels you have and how you cluster the pixels. And so the resolution is before you get to saving it. Now, once you save it, you want to save it in different file formats. Now, let's talk about them. Let's talk about the RAW image format. Each camera has its own RAW output. A Nikon has a particular RAW output. A Canon has a RAW output. There's no standard for RAW outputs. They're storing that in just really the order that the pixels are read off of the sensor, and they have their own specific format. And so, but it saves everything just as it comes off the sensor. And this is the most accurate representation of the image data because it's done before any manipulation. Now, I have a scuba diver friend. And one of the issues in scuba diving is color correction, because when you get down, you've got to do color correction. So mm-hmm. he takes a whiteboard with him, and whenever he's photographing at depth, he'll photograph the whiteboard, and that gives him his color balance. Then when he gets back, you know, back at his house, and he wants to adjust the color balance of all the photographs, he uses that particular image to adjust the color balance. Then he goes in and he adjusts the color balance of all the other photos. And he likes to work with RAW because he likes to see the RAW imagery. He doesn't like it affected. Now, Now, the disadvantage, of course, is that the raw image format, you know, typically the digital camera will provide a program that will read their particular raw output because it's unique to them. So you have to have a program that can read the raw output, but you can't send the raw output to anybody because they can't read it. So it's not really good, useful for exchanging. Now, what frequently people will do is they'll have an image processing program like Photoshop, and they'll import the raw image into Photoshop. I really like Photoshop rather than, say, using the image processing program that would come with a Nikon or a Canon. Now, in order for Photoshop to read the RAW, it has to know how to read it. So you have to go to the Adobe Camera plugin. So the Adobe Camera plugin actually has all the RAW formats built into it. They say, okay, I've got this Canon camera or a particular camera, and that plugin then knows how to read the RAW format. It imports it into Photoshop. You can do all your manipulation, your color correction, your cropping, your adjustment, your color balancing, whatever you want to do, and then you can save it as a JPEG. Now, JPEG is actually a file compression technique. It's a lossy file compression technique, so some information is lost. And you can, when you compress a file in JPEG, you can say make it a small file, you want a large file, and the amount of loss that occurs during the compression determines the size of the output file. So when you want to save your image, you save it as a JPEG and send it to your friends, and you can have any quality of file that you any size of file you want based on how much loss you're willing to accept. Now, PNG files are more of a lossless compression, and they're becoming more popular these days. And so, on the PNG formatting, you can do that, and that they're also in browsers quite conveniently. Now, this TIFF is just really no good. It's a compression technique. It's not very good at all. We got an email from that was a great email. We got an email from Alex. Dear Doc and Jim, is there a better way to become a Linux expert than just getting a book and reading it? Thanks, Jim. Well, actually, Jim, getting a book is probably the worst way to learn Linux. You never do. The best way to learn Linux is just to get it, install it, and play with it. That's how I learn all my software. You get it and you play with it. I mean, a book is a good source of reference material. But any kind of software you want, you get to play with it. And this gets to be an idea that what you want to do is if you're trying to play with software, if you're going to play with Linux, what I'd recommend is you get VMware because you don't want to destroy your operating system when you install Linux. You want to make it as a virtual machine. You see, a virtual machine. Yeah. And so what you want to do is you install VMware. You can download that for free for a client. You can make your operating system virtualized. Then when you install Linux, it's a virtual machine, and so you can keep everything without any problem. That's a great question. So you learn virtualization as well as Linux at the same time. We got an email.
I'm not looking at him. He's making me laugh, Doc.
We've got a visitor. We're gonna get to our visitor right
now. Or you want to finish the mailbag?
Let's finish the mailbag. Then we'll get the.
Can you stick with us?
Oh, I got all day. Yeah.
We got all day. There's only two more. We got. See, we've got Mr. Technology sitting beside, giving me hints in my ear as to exactly how I should be answering these.
Distracting the hell out of us is what he's doing.
We got an email from Leslie in Oakton. Dear Tech Talk, we just shifted our time by 1 hour because of daylight saving time. I have two atomic clocks in the house, and they're supposed to change time automatically. Okay, one of them changed, and the other one didn't. Okay, what am I going to do?
Well, change the atoms.
First of all, Leslie, you do not have an atomic clock in your house. That's the first. You do not have an atomic clock in your house. Your clocks would be radioactive. You don't.
I was going to say there's a bit of a problem.
Your clocks
there, isn't it?
Are connected to the atomic time standard that's maintained by NIST. Now, in the United States, the signals that send out the atomic time standard are sent out by the NIST radio station, WWVB, which is located in Fort Collins, Colorado. Now, WWVB broadcasts at 60 kilohertz. That'd be very low frequency. And your radio-controlled clock actually picks up that signal with a receiver that's permanently tuned to 60 kilohertz, and then it and then you get it. Now the problem is the signal is only is stronger at night because it bounces off the ionosphere, so you got to leave it up at night. Mm-hmm. Now what you have to do, you got to put your clock in a window facing west. So chances are one of
there's
your clocks
way too much going on
one
here.
One of your clocks is close to the window, and the other one isn't. So just put it in the window, save it, and it'll be up all night. That is the deal. Now we got one final email from Bernie, which is this is the highlight
is
of the show.
Is his clock busted too?
No. Okay. Why isn't the time on my computer the same as that on my self-synchronizing watch? See, I put this together because I got I had two time questions. Okay, Bernie, your watch is connected to the time standard, but your you know the wireless the radio time standard out in Fort Collins, but your computer is connected to a time standard on the internet.
Uh-huh.
So the first what you want to do is you want to check whether your computer is actually using a time standard to automatically adjust. So you right-click on the clock, go to adjust time and date. There will be a dialog box, and you want to make certain that you are automatically updating your time to the time standard. Now, like if you're Microsoft, the time standard is time.microsoft.com. But that may not be perfect. So you could go to the NIST standard, and so you go to nist.gov/server CGI. I'll give the complete link there.
Please
and you
do.
And you can get there directly to the NIST time standards. And now we're finished with all the email.
Fascinating.
Fascinating.
We have to do this.
The party don't start till I walk in.
Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop.
Dave.
There you go. There we go. There's David.
There's a...
The mic's working.
Take it.
Are you in radio?
Hello?
Turn it on.
Isn't it on?
The on button. How long have you been doing this, Bird?
Can I go to the nurse's office now?
Okay. What I want to know is, how are you going to survive without Twinkies, Dave?
Wow.
Twinkies are gone.
Well, I've bought some a couple of years ago. They're still in the basement.
Oh, they're still good.
In the bomb shelter?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you here to talk about the pee-controlled games?
Man, it's rapid fire here. Not even a hello. How you doing,
Hi,
Dave?
David, how are you?
Hello, Dave.
I got to sit through your mailbag.
It's our show.
It's your show. That's right. I forgot. I would suggest, after hearing those emailers, that one of the Doc's favorite songs is I Get Nisty. From falling in love. I get nisty. Is it nisty?
Nisty, nisty.
Anyway, here we are.
Is that all you got today?
No, I'm bringing it. Hold on. Just hold on a second.
You have an iPhone 5 yet?
Yeah, you've got... No, I
what?
Don't. I'm not going for it.
Why not?
Listen, I know that Apple's got us all trained like, just dogs with beef stew, okay? Here's my new beef stew. I stopped. I did every phone there was. I did the first one, the second one, the third one, the 4, the 4S.
How about the iPad Mini? Do you have the iPad Mini yet?
I'm thinking about getting it.
He likes certain beef stew.
Right. I didn't get, I got two iPads and I gave them both away.
I know that.
Just, now you won yours, right?
Yeah, wait, I've never bought an iPad.
No, you don't buy anything.
I don't buy anything.
My wife won.
No. Yeah, we won two iPads.
We did, yeah. This is wonderful.
Well, I stole two iPads from my wife. So we have an iPad 1 and an iPad 2.
Nobody pulls off the John Walsh look like the doctor. Look at his black leather jacket. Yeah, exactly.
So anyway. I gave her the iPad 1 because she's number one in the household.
Exactly. But no, I talk seriously. I think I like the Mini because it's not too small. It's kind of a Goldilocks option. Mm-hmm. Not too big, not too small. Just right. And it's...
You could drive it around in your Mini Cooper.
Wow, Doc. Wow. You've had some time off.
He hasn't. He needs some time off.
Maybe I need some time off.
He was over this weekend fixing General Petraeus' TV.
I was working on some email security for General Petraeus. He needs better passwords.
Hey,
Doc, I was kind of surprised by that. But on a serious topic here, we're talking about email security.
Mm-hmm.
He would post his emails in a folder, in other words, so it wouldn't trigger... some kind of whang.
Doc could tell us what that was.
Doc knows what that's all about. I'm sure you'll get a dissertation.
He's going to get into that later.
I'm going to get into that. How they track down Paula Broadwell's email. How they tracked it down. Very interesting.
Exactly. And when you figure that out and you email me, don't do it shirtless. Okay, please.
No, I'm not going to do that.
I want to email anyone shirtless.
But later in the show, I'll give tips to people who want to keep their email secret.
Now, did you get an iPhone 5?
No, I've got an iPhone 4S.
I'm done.
I'm happy with an iPhone.
You know what?
I'm happy with
iPhone parody in here.
Yeah, it's all 4s, right? 4s?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. you know, I don't want to have to go buy all the new cords. And
if yeah. I know, I hate know, that new
hate
cord.
That
but the headphone
yeah,
jack
I don't like that.
Is on the bottom.
Really?
It's the commercial.
Oh, please.
I don't want to get. Then you've got to get new phones, yeah, and new chargers phone, for the car, bang, bang, everything. Bang.
And to tell you what, I got the 4S, but I never use the S part. I never use it. I just don't. I just had to have it. I had to be the new kid with the new thing, and I'm just not going to go
do
that.
Too.
How do you like the new Google Maps? Did you upgrade to iOS 6?
Yeah, I did.
I did
yeah.
too.
Oh, I hate their maps.
You
I
know,
like
but
Maps.
But I have to tell you, I was down in Atlanta this last week, and I used the Apple Maps, you know, right. to go from Charlotte to Atlanta, and they were pretty nice.
Oh, listen, I was
surprised. It's voice navigation.
I get the best tip
well.
I got for you right now, and of course I'm just you know Mr. Undereducated sitting yeah. next to the Mount Rushmore of education. But I did the MapQuest download, and I love it. It's all voice commands. Got me where I wanted to go, and I was out in the boonies looking for something. So
why do you need a GPS anymore, right?
Exactly. Why are you buying anything at Costco?
Garmin.
The Garmin. I mean, those guys. Yeah. Gotta be hurting going
the MapQuest is pretty good.
Very good.
MapQuest is good. I've used MapQuest too. That's probably the best voice.
It really is
for the Apple.
It's quite wonderful.
Now Google is about ready to release their own mapping application with voice navigation.
Hey, listen, I'm on a short leash this morning, so I'm going to get to what I want to talk about.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. What you want
to
talk about?
Talk to
okay.
me about the Windows 8, the Windows 8 software. Mm-hmm. Is it all touch tone? I mean, that touch push button.
What they try? If you go down and play with it, right. You know, I went down to Best Buy and played with it.
Well, what I want to know is, can I download it on my, you know, my doorstop computer? I mean, it's kind of old, five mm-hmm. or 6 years, which is
I don't, I wouldn't,
no,
I wouldn't, no.
No,
I think
you got to have a whole new setup for this.
I would not.
No.
No, it's too no. resource.
So it's mouseless, is that
it's,
it?
It's mouseless. So they really wanted a system that would work for touch screens.
Right.
And so they've got something that's going to span from PCs to touch screens.
But you played with it. What did you think?
I played with it. I mean, it was. I played with the touch screen there.
You're not selling me, Doc. I'm not getting the love.
I mean, I wasn't really enthusiastic about it.
Okay.
Because here's the problem. It wasn't as elegant as Apple.
Right.
And then I had to figure something out. And so what it is, they're trying to be like Apple, but they didn't quite make it.
Right.
And so I really wasn't enthused by it. And there's kind of a love-hate on this thing. A lot of people want to go back to 7 when they've tried 8.
Good. I don't feel bad then. Last question, I have to leave.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Now, I just recently have just stopped buying the paper because it's just a historical piece of paper now.
Yes, not absolutely, news. Absolutely.
And I got tired of the paper box not working and fighting with the waitress at Bob Evans. And bum, bum, bum. I started reading the Washington Post and other things on my smartphone, which is a kind of a chore because it's so small.
Small, right. Mm-hmm.
That's why the Apple, the mini iPad
the mini,
is interesting to me.
That's right.
It does the same thing as the big iPad. Am I right? Just a smaller screen. Right?
It's a smaller screen. It doesn't have the super duper high resolution screen.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
You know, the Retina. It doesn't have the Retina.
I'm not watching movies on
a
mini iPad.
Retina.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So it's actually competing with the Kindle. It's competing with the Kindle.
And you're what do you think? Do you like it or not?
Yeah, I think it's a good competition for the Kindle.
Is it doable? I mean, is that something you'd be interested in? And
yeah. here's
if Marianne can win it, yeah.
See, the thing is, the regular iPad is too heavy to hold if you're reading a book.
Exactly.
So now, you can hold it in one hand. So it's like the Kindle.
So I can read the paper on this quite comfortably.
You can read the paper. Yeah. So it has actually a pretty good niche, and they did research. It's not competing with the iPad. They're getting people that are just getting their first pad, and so I think it's a pretty good option if you're now. But there's some people that love the Kindle, and the Kindle's a lot. The Kindle's cheaper.
Yeah.
So the
yeah.
so it's probably if but all Apple, you're doing is reading yeah. that it's probably no better than the Kindle.
Right.
But if you like the Apple applications,
well, the Apple has branded itself as a quality product. Even if you don't like some of the stuff they do, you know it's a quality
yeah,
product.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So, and then the other thing you could do with it, you could do navigation with it. You see.
Right.
So it's a bigger screen for navigation.
Now, forgive me, on the mini pad, that's not phone interactive at all, is it? Or is it?
No, it's not.
Okay,
it's not phone. And they're coming out with a.
But your iTunes can be loaded up there, right?
Yeah, yeah, okay. through Wi-Fi.
Right.
And there's no reason to get a phone connection because then you got to pay $25 a month.
Yeah, forget that.
So so just get the Wi-Fi.
Hey, we keeping your buddy up over here? He's yawning in the middle of your dissertation. What's that all about? Never mind.
He is.
I know what that's about.
He is anxious to get to the P-controlled games.
Exactly.
He is ready to go after the P-controlled games.
You had my intro. Do you have my exit?
There is no exit. No, your exit is you getting up and leaving.
Bye, guys. Hey, welcome back.
You've been gone for a while.
I've been gone for a while.
That's right.
Well, welcome me home, darling.
Welcome back.
I was wondering this morning. I loaded your intro in this morning, hoping you would come down.
All right, Doc. Hey, listen, when Marianne wins that mini iPad, would you ask her if she could maybe bend two?
Okay, I'll ask her to do it. I'll have her check on that.
Let's make it three.
Make it three.
Okay, three.
Bye-bye, guys. Thank you so much. I love you.
Okay. Hey, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for coming by, man. Okay. This is Tech Talk Radio on 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. We will be... Hey, wait a minute. Doc, headphones back on. We're not done here. You're doing other stuff besides entertaining David Byrd over there. What else are you doing?
I'm monitoring our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/techtalkonline. And we love all your emails. Yes. Send us to techtalk@stratford.edu.
That's right. This is Tech Talk, and we'll be right back right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Application and software developers shape our world. Those who design and build these systems are the leaders we follow. The School of Computer Information Systems at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers programs with a real-world, hands-on education. In fact, many of today's Stratford IT grads are working in their chosen field. Make it work for you. Stratford University. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. A rewarding future as a holistic caregiver or nurse practitioner. Combining the art of caring with the human science makes nursing today's breakout field. Stratford University's School of Nursing at the Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers a patient-centered approach with valuable core clinical training. Stratford provides a real-world education in nursing. In fact, many of today's Stratford nursing grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for...
Profiles in IT.
Yes, today we're talking about Stephen J. Sanofsky. Stephen J. Sanofsky was the president of the Windows division at Microsoft from July 2009 through his departure November 12, 2012. He was unceremoniously dumped by Steve Ballmer, although they said he resigned.
Uh-huh.
Sanofsky was born in 1965 in New York City, received his Bachelor of Arts and Sciences from Cornell University in 1987. You know, it's interesting. Microsoft gets a lot of Cornell grads because that's where Bill Gates dropped out. He dropped out of Cornell.
Yeah.
So he's kind of a Cornell. He's not a Cornell grad, but he's a Cornell student for a while. And he got his master's in computer science from the University of Massachusetts in 1989. While he was in college, he spent 3 years learning Russian. I don't know why, but...
My daughter wants to take sign language as a foreign language.
In July of 1989, right after he got his master's degree, Sanofsky joined Microsoft as a software design engineer. In 1994, when the Office product unit was formed, Sanofsky joined as director of program management and led the shared technologies for Office 95 and Office 97. In addition, he oversaw the development of Microsoft Office 2003, Microsoft Office XP, and Microsoft Office 2000. He also oversaw the development of Microsoft Office systems, programs, servers, and services. He spent about 4 years as software design engineer and project lead for the Development Tools Group, working on the foundation classes for the C++ library. These are standard, subroutines that they write. So if you want to develop code, you can just grab a subroutine. They call them the foundations library. Zanofsky has blogged about what it was like to be a Microsoft employee in Steven Zanofsky's Microsoft Tech Talk. And he stopped doing that about 6 years ago, but all of those blogs are still, I was reading some of the blogs. He talks about what it's like to be at Microsoft, some of the secret quirks of Bill Gates and Ballmer and the whole crew there. And his goal was to try to attract people to Microsoft and then keep Microsoft engineers from leaving and going to Google. That's what he was going on. He stopped doing that blog about 5-6 years ago when he got so involved with Windows development. He became the president of the Windows division in July of 2009. His first projects included Windows Live, Wave 3, and Internet Explorer 8. Zanofsky and John Devan headed the development of Windows 7. You see, he got involved with Windows division right after they had released Vista. And Vista was a resounding failure. It was a huge failure for Microsoft. Nobody wanted to, nobody wanted to switch to Vista. They thought XP's fine. Vista was like slow. It wasn't very effective. It was a huge marketing failure for Microsoft. So he came in, revamped the whole way that they did development, especially for Windows 7. His philosophy was not to make any promises about the product or even discuss anything about the product until it felt like it was a quality product. He sort of followed more of the Apple technique of secrecy until you've got something that's good. Now, under Zanofsky's leadership, the Windows division successfully shipped the successor to Windows Vista, Windows 7. Windows 7 was a huge success, and it contributed to the record-breaking revenue earnings for Microsoft in 2010. He basically got rid of all the middle managers at the division. He made it a much flatter organization, got rid of the bureaucracy, and just focused on code. He completely transformed the way Microsoft did code development. And in order to actually get the stuff done, get the product out on time, many people felt he was a complete jerk. He didn't get along with people, wasn't a team player. He was all about Steve Zanofsky and getting the product out. But he was focused on getting out the product. I mean, there was a similar story at Apple. Scott Forstall was the guy behind the iOS system, releasing iOS 6, and he was also quite a jerk. But he got out the software, but he didn't get along with the CEO of Apple, so they got rid of Scott Forstall. So we're seeing a changing of the guard at these companies, where these quirky personalities are getting weeded out as they try to get a more corporate environment. Now, time will tell whether this is an effective strategy.
Well, that's funny because, you usually get eccentrics who come up with great ideas.
Yeah.
And then we get this homogenization of things get so boring.
It may turn out that there's less innovation under this homogenized kind of environment without quirky personalities.
Uh-huh.
Now, Zanofsky worked on Windows 8 after a successful Windows 7 launch, and he regularly blogged about the feature, so he's got and he posted a blog entry just last month on this. So you can search for Windows Zanofsky's Windows 8 blog, and it's kind of interesting. He talked about the features, what he thought about the features. He was actually viewed as a highly technical guy. And he was respected by his Windows 8 development team. They gave him a standing ovation after the Windows 8 launch. He was really, because he was really technical. Whereas Ballmer is viewed as kind of a non-technical bozo by the technical people. And so many were saying that Steve Zanofsky may be the next CEO. I don't think Ballmer liked that talk.
Uh-huh.
I don't think he liked that talk at all. Zanofsky left Microsoft on November 12, 2012. His departure was seen externally as a result of the power struggle or friction between himself and the CEO, Steve Ballmer. He wrote a book, Book One Strategy, Organization Planning and Decision Making. He co-authored the book. He published it in 2009. It discusses his struggle with refocusing the Windows division after the Vista debacle. So it's kind of an interesting book. It's an interesting read if you want to see how to turn around a software development company. Many viewed him as a successor to Steve Ballmer. His personality was very abrasive, and he was not viewed as a team player. For instance, I was reading that they had an off-site retreat for all the executives, and all the executives had to make a presentation of their product line so they could sort of integrate and all become one Microsoft. And then the idea was that you'd make your presentation, and then you would sit in on everyone else's presentation, and so that you could become familiar with what they were working on. So Steve Sinofsky went to this off-site retreat. He got up, and when he got up, he says, "Well, actually, I didn't prepare anything for this. If you want to know anything about Windows 8, just go to my blog. It's all there." Then after he finished making his non-presentation, he left, uh-huh. And he didn't listen to any other presentations.
Good grief.
Steve Ballmer was teed off about that. Now, let's talk about money. In 2012, his total compensation was $8.6 million. He got $2.2 million in cash salary and $6.4 million in long-term compensation, probably stock options more than likely. So he was making, he was doing all right. Many analysts think that after he leaves Microsoft, if he becomes CEO of another tech company, stays involved with technology, that he's even more likely to become the next CEO of Microsoft, because he actually did make a material difference in how they developed code. And you see, you really can only be a jerk like that. Say, I mean, you know, Steve Jobs was kind of a jerk, but he owned the company.
Right.
So he couldn't be fired.
Right.
So the only way to be a jerk and survive is to be the top jerk. So he may be brought back to be the top jerk at Microsoft, and they might work to bring all of the units together. See, Ballmer did not think that the Windows platform should be separate from the Windows Phone platform, should be separate from the Surface platform. Mm-hmm. They should all be integrated together, and it was hard for these other divisions to work with him. So there you go. All you want to know about Stephen J. Sinofsky, the man who was behind Windows 7 and Windows 8, and probably we'll see more of him in the future.
You know, I find there are two times in this life that you are referred to by all three of your names. One is when you're accused of being a serial killer, and the other is in Profiles in IT.
Oh, that's right.
Okay, I thought that was funny. Anyway, this is Tech Talk Radio. Hope you're paying attention, because we're going to have a quiz in just a moment on knowledge just imparted by Dr. Schertz. So stay tuned. This is Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM. FMHD2. We will be right back.
It's technology. It's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Technology is constantly changing. An effective IT manager must not only understand the possibilities and limitations of the technology, but also the requirements and constraints of the business world. Enhance your career today with a master's degree from Stratford University School of Computer Information Systems. Classes are offered day, evening, and weekends to match your busy schedule and are taught by experienced faculty members with industry experience. Earn your master's degree in as little as 15 months with an accelerated program in software engineering, information systems, information assurance, or telecommunications. Learn more about earning your master's degree from Stratford University at stratford.edu or call 1-800-444-0804. Disclose statements available at stratford.edu/disclosures. Stratford University, 1-800-444-0804.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now, here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
I hope you were listening to the first half of this Classroom of the Airwaves.
It's actually more than half.
Because if you were listening to the first two-thirds of this class of the airwaves, you know, time flies when you're having fun.
It does, when David Byrd shows up.
That's right. If you were listening to the show, you will remember we talked about Stephen J. Sanofsky. I'm going to have a question about Stephen J. Sanofsky. And if you get the correct answer to that question, that means you'll have won the pop quiz. And if you get the right answer to the pop quiz, you'll win two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room and the Carême Dining Room. Now, when I was talking about Stephen J. Sanofsky, I talked about his college experiences. He, of course, graduated from Cornell, and then he got a master's degree from Massachusetts, University of Massachusetts. What language did Stephen Sanofsky learn while he was in college?
Ooh, you'd have to be paying attention to that, wouldn't you?
Yes. If you get the right answer to that, you just give us a phone call at a particular number.
All right. And that number would be, if you're calling from east of Odenton, it's 877-936-9333. If you're calling from west of Walla Walla, Washington, it's 877-936-9333. And, of course, the wild card line for everybody else is 877-936-9333.
If you're calling from Malaysia, you want to use Skype. So you go to Tech Talk Radio 1 and simply connect with that account, and your call will be forwarded directly to the studio, free of charge.
And why? The calls are pouring in. So let's do something
right.
Short, because we will have a winner here shortly.
Well, let's do the dumb idea of the week. The pee-controlled games. That would be P-E-E. A London startup has secured $700,000. I'd like to talk to the guy that gave him that money.
Yeah, really.
In seed funding to launch a pee-controlled video game. Whoops.
Whoa.
Whoa. I'm so excited.
He's so excited he knocked his headphones off.
A pee-controlled video game in public restrooms, including those in airports and hotels. Captive Media launched in the UK in 2011 and has already installed washroom units in venues in 8 European countries, with games featured in the bathrooms of Ogilvy One's London office and Tabouche Bar in Cambridge. The system consists of high-definition screens that feature advertisements when not in use, and it switches to the gaming mode when the user steps up to the plate. But the system is not touchscreen. It is pee-powered. Infrared beams passing over the urinal pick up the flow direction. This feeds data into an algorithm so the user can navigate their stream left or right to control the simple game, such as snowboarding, running, or a pub quiz-style Q&A. The system aims to plug the 55-second marketing gap when men are staring at a blank wall.
Oh, no.
Apparently, they've been very successful. See, the thing is, you can actually get scores on these things. And so men are competing who can have the highest score, so they've got to go out and drink more beer to come back and play the game again. Jeez. So the bars are loving this.
Can you put the game on pause while you go reload?
No, you can't do it. Now, here's the one gripe. Women want to play the game. So now they're working on IR-controlled toilets so women can play the game. I can't even imagine that.
I don't even think
so. There you
this.
Go. Dumb idea of the week.
It may be the grossest idea of the week, but it certainly doesn't sound dumb, because somebody's going to make a lot of money.
Somebody put $700,000 against it.
Good grief, that's crazy. All right, we have got the people on the phone here. We're going to go first of all to let's go to line 2. This is Selena, and she is calling us from Silver Spring, Maryland. Selena, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk. How are you?
Yes, good morning. Thank you. Fine.
Good.
Good morning. Yes, earlier in the show, I talked about Stephen J. Sanofsky, of course, the former president of the Windows division at Microsoft. What language did he learn while he was in college?
He learned Russian.
That is correct.
Oh, and she did it with the proper accent.
Yeah,
too.
With the proper accent. That is fantastic. You'll win 2 tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room. Great job. Stay on the line and give your name, address, and email address to Andrew, and we'll get the tickets out to you next week.
Selena, thanks for calling. You seem like a name that I haven't seen before. Have you been listening to us for long?
A short while, actually.
Gotcha. How'd you find us?
I listen to this particular radio station, and so I've just started listening to your show and some others.
Excellent. Thank you so much. We appreciate your calling. Thanks for listening, and stand by. And Professor Andrew Mitchell, he's been given an upgrade there. He's now actual assistant.
Oh, assistant professor.
Professor. He was adjunct professor.
He's adjunct.
Now he's professor.
But he doesn't have tenure. We've got to be careful about that.
We do.
Yeah.
What we need to do, Doc, is we need to take a short break.
Oh, okay.
This is
Very
Tech Talk
good.
Radio and Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2, 103.5 FM HD2. More Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
Budget analyst, a vice president of sales. These are today's business leaders, and a degree from Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus offers you a powerful path to navigate the corporate world. The School of Business Administration at Stratford University offers both bachelor's and master's degree programs for a real-world education. In fact, many of today's Stratford business grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu. An executive chef at a trendy restaurant, a hotel general manager at a prestigious resort. These are the high-profile positions in the culinary arts and hospitality management industry. Get working towards your bachelor's or master's degree at Stratford University's Tyson's Corner or Woodbridge campus. In fact, many of today's Stratford culinary arts and hospitality grads are working in their chosen fields. Make it work for you. Get working. Check us out on the web at stratford.edu. That's stratford.edu.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And, of course, we've been listening and hearing a lot about Paula Broadwell's internet trail.
Indeed.
She's, of course, the lady that was exchanging emails with General Petraeus, and he's been in the news quite a bit. And I was interested to know how in the world did the FBI track her down? So I'll give some of the details on this thing. It turned out that the FBI got into the case because of apparent cyber harassment against a lady in Tampa, Florida, and that led to the resignation of CIA Chief David Petraeus. Now, the gist of the story is that Jill Kelly, a social planner in Tampa, started getting approximately 10 menacing emails from an anonymous harasser. Now, normally, nothing would happen with that, but she had a bud who was an FBI agent in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, okay, I'll take a look at it. Even though there was no explicit threat of violence in the emails, the FBI decided to investigate. And normally they wouldn't have done it, but she was a friend, and so the guy decided, okay, I'll take a look at it. Now, the New York Times and Wall Street Journal described the digital forensic work that led the FBI to finger Paula Broadwell. She, of course, was a biographer of Petraeus's biography. I forget the actual title of the book. The Wall Street Journal reported that the FBI used the metadata footprints left by emails. See, when you get an email, there's a lot of tagging information at the top, and if you ask to see the whole header, there's a lot of information. You can track the route of the email as it goes from the sender to you, and you can use that metadata footprint to sort of tell where it came from. Now, they could actually identify the IP address that was used to send the emails. Now, Paula Broadwell was trying to be very sneaky. First of all, she was using a throwaway account. She would open up an account and use it one time, send an email, and then throw it away and make up another account, you know, like a throwaway Yahoo account or a throwaway Gmail account. So she figured that if she used a throwaway account, there would be no other way for people to track her down. And she never sent the email from home, but she sent it from hotels where she was staying.
Mm-hmm.
So the FBI, they were able to actually go in and get the IP address of where the email was being sent from. Then they got the IP address of these multiple hotels. Then they were able to subpoena the hotel for the guest list. And then they looked for a correlation of the same guest across all of these different instances of a hotel tracking.
Uh-huh.
And there was one guest who was always in the hotel when one of these emails was sent, Paula Broadwell.
Wow.
So that's how they tracked her down.
Uh-huh.
Then once they had tracked her down individually, they got a subpoena to go to Gmail and get access to her Gmail account, and that's where they discovered all of the other activity between her and Petraeus. So she was sent. She was using the throwaway email accounts for the harassment, but then she had a standard Gmail account for talking to Petraeus. So actually, that was quite a bit of forensics work, and
I'm surprised
the FBI, you know, took all that time to do it. But they, the reason they did that also is that some of the threatening emails appeared as though the writer had some access to classified data, so they thought there could be some sort of real threat there. So here's the thing. If you're going to be sending emails you don't want to track down, you have to go to a location or an IP address that you never go to. So if you're never going to go to a place where you can be traced. You're going to want to go across town to some place that you never use for anything else and send out your email from that IP address that has no trace to you. I mean, it's just just a hint in case you ever want to try that.
Yeah, I'm writing that down.
Yeah, write that down, you know, in case you ever want to use it. I'm just surprised that the FBI went to all of that work to track that down. And she worked so hard. She thought she was so clever because she never sent it from home, but she should have actually sent it from the hotel next door. Never at the hotel. But next time she does this, I think she'll do it a different technique. Let's talk about how the cloud helped Obama win.
Okay.
Remember last week I talked about Romney's super secret program, ORCA, which was basically this massive application that was going to help them on election day get out the vote, track everything. And ORCA had never been beta tested, never been tested. And on election day, it failed. And many believe that the failure of ORCA, which, of course, was named after a killer whale, was the cause of Romney's failure because the vote differential was so slight. So this week I'll talk about Obama and his efforts on the cloud because his cloud applications worked very well. They didn't melt down. Of course, he had used them once before.
Right.
And so
he was very successful the first time.
He was very successful. So Jeff Barr, a web service evangelist at Amazon.com, has written an interesting blog post about how Amazon's cloud helped Barack Obama win the election. In the post, Barr says, imagine setting up the technology infrastructure needed to power a dynamic billion-dollar organization under strict time limits using volunteer labor with traffic peaking for just one day, and then shutting everything down shortly thereafter. It's quite a daunting task. The words
really
mission critical definitely apply here. He outlines the how the campaign used Amazon Web Services, AWS, to avoid IT investment that would have run into tens of millions of dollars. Along the way, they built and ran more than 200 applications on Amazon Web Services, scaled to support millions of users. One of these apps called... the campaign call tool supported 7,000 concurrent users and placed over 2 million calls in the last 4 days of the campaign. The post further outlines the technology and architecture used within the campaign. A database running on the Amazon Relational Database Services, RDS, served as the primary register of voter file information. The database integrated data from a number of sources, including BarackObama.com, donor information from the finance team, in order to give the campaign managers a dynamic, fully integrated view of what was going on. Alongside this database, an analytics system running EC2 cluster compute instances was in operation. Another database cluster, Live Level DB, ran on a trio of high-memory quadruple extra-large instances. This array of databases allowed the campaign workers to target and segment prospective voters, sift through marketing resources based on near real-time feedback on the effectiveness of certain ads, drive a donation system that collected over $1 billion, the 30th largest e-commerce site in the world. The applications run on the Obama campaign were comparable in scope and complexity to those seen in the largest enterprises and data-rich startups. So that was a very successful area in the use of IT, and I think what we're going to see now in politics, IT infrastructure is becoming increasingly more important across the way.
You're right.
Listen, the time is almost up. Yeah, listen, go to stratford.edu. We love all of your emails, techtalk@stratford.edu. In addition to that, we want you to go to Stratford and tell them about Tech Talk. And don't forget to download our podcast at techtalkonline.com.
That's right. Hope you liked the show. If you did, you can listen to it again at 6 o'clock tomorrow. Otherwise, we'll see you next week here on Tech Talk.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
And indeed, Navy football is on the air today, starting at 1:30. It is Senior Day, the last home game of the season for the Navy Middies, playing against Texas today. So tune in for that. Right now in Washington, it is 40 degrees under clear skies, going up to 53 at 10 a.m.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers, as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions.